Welcome to the Humanist Union of Madison, December meeting. Our program today will be presented by Galen Smith on religious aspects of population growth.
Okay, well, you'll notice I passed out an outline, and I haven't actually written out the whole presentation, so I'm going to talk more or less from this outline. It turned out to be a huge subject, much more than I realized before I really got into it. And first, I'd like to repeat the obvious to most of you, why this subject is important. The most general, most blunt thing we can say for the beginning is that it involves huge social pathologies that we're witnessing worldwide these days in the world, involving war, terrorism, the drug trade, economic crises, failing and failed states, etc. Very intimately, the whole subject of rapid population growth is basic to this. Mm-hmm. And I want to refer you to one of the best books on the general subject of how societies manage to get along in the world, healthy or not, and that's the book Collapse by Jared Diamond. And toward the end, here's the last chapter, or next to last, he summarizes much of what he wrote in his whole book here, and points out that there are about 12 serious environmental problems and facing past and present societies, and each of these must be solved in order to resolve most of the social pathologies that we see worldwide. But the most basic of all of these 12 is population growth. I'm going to very briefly list the others, just so you'll be aware of them. They all have to do with environmental matters. The first is the accelerating rate of destruction and degradation of natural areas. And this is closely related to the harvesting of wild foods. He points out, for example, about 2 billion people depend on food from oceans to obtain their protein, their necessary protein. About 2 billion out of over 6 billion population, about a third. The third is extinction of wild species extinction, more or less. The fourth is the degradation and loss of soils, which are, of course, necessary for growing our food and other things that we need. Fifth is sources of energy, as everybody's familiar with now, mainly fossil fuels. Sixth is availability of fresh water. Remember, these are all absolutely essential to the success of any society. Yes. All 12 of these.
Especially water.
Seventh is the ability to grow enough crops to support our society. Crops, food and other, and timber and other things that we grow. Eighth is chemical pollution of our habitat. Ninth is invasive species. I know some ecologists say that invasive species introduced from various other parts of the world into our area or into other parts of the world, actually is the biggest ecological problem we've got in the whole world.
Would that be for water?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I've heard, as I heard a lecture one time by a guy that works in invasive species and is one of these people, the world ecologist, who was tied in with the world ecologist community. And he said that that was his opinion and the opinion of a lot of major ecologists around the world.
We count humans as invasive species. Humans are pretty invasive.
Yeah, well, it's, and the tenth is the gases that we put into our atmosphere, and of course that leads to climate change and various other things. 11th in his list is population, human population growth, and the last is the impact of that population, the cumulative impact. So both of those are important, the total numbers and the impact per person. Those are basic. So there's a lot of, well, I have on the list here the general idea of carrying capacity. And all of you are probably aware of that. That means how many individuals of a population of living organisms can thrive, let's say, in a particular habitat. There have been a lot of, you can think of any living organism from bacteria, fungi, fruit flies, there's other insects. There have been a lot of experimental work done by the ecologists using those kinds of organisms because they're very easy to do experiments in a laboratory. And things like muskrats and deer and other large animals, they all have this, their environments have a certain carrying capacity for the total numbers without degrading the habitat so that it's harmful to that population. And then if you want to get more deeply into the subject, I highly, general ecology, and population ecology, I highly recommend this book by Odom, Eugene Odom from University of Georgia, called Ecology and Our Endangered Life Support Systems. I used this as a textbook in teaching a course in general ecology for non-majors at Whitewater for many, many years, starting with the first Earth Day, 1970. And it's got, it's extremely well written. And it's got a couple of sections on human population growth and some good background information on the basic ecology of population. So I also recommend Garrett Hardin's book, H-A-R-D-I-N, I can pass this around if you want to pass these around. And Garrett Hardin has a very good section on carrying capacity here. This is a great book if you're interested in human environmental problems. I highly recommend that you get a hold of this. It's now about 10 years old, but it's...
Galen, you should mention the title.
The title is called Living Within Limits, and it's got subtitles there. Ecology, Economics, and Population Taboos. And he's written several other books too, which are all good. Let's move on, because our main subject really is how religions are involved. But I want to point out that the world population has been growing very rapidly, and all of you know this, but maybe you kind of forget. how rapid it's been growing. And so I did some little calculations about how much the world population and the U.S. population has grown in my lifetime. I was born in 1924. And in 1924, there were about 1.7 to 1.8 billion people worldwide. When Rose and I were married in 1950, that had risen to about 2.2 billion. By 1970, the first Earth Day had risen to 4 billion. It was over doubling, more than doubled. And now it's about 6.9 billion, getting close to 7 billion. Won't take long. And that's a doubling, about two doublings, about four times. Four times what it was in 1924. The U.S. population was about 105 million when I was born, and it's now about 310 million. And it's, therefore, it's about tripled, three times as big as it was when I was born. And it's still growing, the United States population. A lot of people have the mistaken notion that the U.S. population is not growing. It's growing relatively slowly, but it doesn't have to be terribly fast to be very significant. And I want to point out that any growth in population is a problem because even with slow growth, eventually it can lead to huge numbers. Partly because the growth is a geometric growth, so it feeds upon itself. The bigger the bigger the population, the more rapid the growth is, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where the notion of the population bomb comes from, for example. It just gets faster and faster as time goes on, accelerates. Now, what are the causes of overpopulation? Most of you are familiar with the general story. For most of human history, there was essentially no growth in population. It was stable. We're talking about a million years, something like that, at least thousands of years. And then along came agriculture. And as soon as people learned how to cultivate crops and so on, that gave a real boost to the population. It started to rise. But it rose relatively slowly in most of the world, but quite a lot. And then came along the Industrial Revolution, and with machinery and so on, a lot of technology improvements. And that gave another boost. And then the discovery of fossil fuels, so provided much more efficient energy than previously. A lot of the energy that was used earlier was water power. And they were able to get oil, gas, and coal. And you know the story about that. That gave an enormous boost to the population growth. It simply allowed a lot more people to survive. And what happens in natural population is that eventually the births, the deaths equal the births, and they reach some sort of stability of zero population growth. But what's happened? Oh yeah, in the final the final big boost to the population is the is modern medicine, which has allowed a lot more people to survive. Infant mortality is way down. Maternal mortality, infant mortality, and mortality in general. So the death rates are way, way down from what they used to be. But birth rates remained high for a long time. For example, in this country, a couple of generations ago, the average family size was about six people, six kids in the family. And that caused a rapid increase in population, as a matter of fact. But that was kind of standard part in the bad old days when people were dying a lot more. Now that there a lot less people are dying, we have to control our birth rates in order to prevent overpopulation. Now, what about? We have, you're familiar with all the statistics, I guess, on the world population. I have, there's a lot of stuff available on the web. All you have to do is, if you use the web, all you have to do is Google world population growth and so on, you get a whole lot of stuff. But what we find is that the growth in population is not uniform all over the world. It's much more rapid in parts of the world than others. And the United States has a relatively slow growth, but significant growth of population. Most of Western Europe has almost zero population growth of the indigenous people. Many of those countries, however, their populations are growing because of immigration. Our population in the United States also is growing much more rapidly because of a huge amount of immigration. There's more immigration now, total number of people, than ever in the whole history of the United States. Higher numbers, more people immigrated, moving to the United States than ever before. And that's increasing as time goes on, year by year. That's accelerating. And those people add to their U.S. population or the populations of the countries they're moving to, but they also tend to be, many of those immigrants, not all, but many of them tend to have large families. So, in the first generation, they have families of maybe three, four, five, six, seven kids, and that adds, that boosts the population of the country, including the United States. But in addition, of course, there are those countries which are growing even more rapidly, and you can get these maps, for example. I wish I'd been able to enlarge them online, if you know what web page to get into. It's been a while since I've actually gotten these, so I forgot exactly which web page it was. These are maps of the world. This is the world here. This is Africa. You do one for Asia. You can do one for South America. And North America, and so on, Central America. And they're color-coded to show, in this case, one of the most important measures of population growth is total fertility rate. That's the number of children that the average woman has in her lifetime. All right. So that will vary in different parts of the world from about 1.5 minimum to roughly 6.5 children on the average per woman. and the bright colors, the orange and reds here, so you can see a few little dots from way back there, are the extremely fast growing countries. In South America, there's one, it's Uruguay, I think, right there in the middle of South America. And
that's Paraguay.
And that's Paraguay, sure, good for you. And in Asia, in Africa, these the brown, bright brown ones, there are a number of different countries. Uganda, and I have listed here somewhere, but anyway, you're all familiar with the fact that much of Africa, this whole, most of Africa, all these green and brown colors are fairly rapidly growing populations. Most of Africa has population explosions, basically. And in Asia, Afghanistan stands out as that bright orange spot there. It's the most rapidly growing population in Asia, with a fertility of rate about 6.5 per woman, which has not changed over the last 10 years or so of where the statistics were available. It's not slowing down. So the United States and the other allies are in trouble in Afghanistan. Serious trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Gail, may Afghanistan people
is not bothered by the war going on, and people getting killed and the people running from it? The number of people being killed is a drop in the bucket compared to how many are being born. Totally insignificant.
Galen, you should go on to the religious
aspects. Okay. And lastly, well, it's related here. And also Yemen and Somalia, for example. Now, with regard to what's causing those high growth rates, the question is whether religion has anything to do with it. And it turns out, if you look at the situation rather carefully, it's rather difficult to determine. And, for example, a lot of the African populations are growing very rapidly, where the religions, local religions, probably don't have anything to do with it. It's other factors in the societal factors. But it's interesting to pick out the Islamic countries. And Somalia, for example, and Yemen and Afghanistan are examples, major examples. And do those countries sound familiar to you? They're in the news every day, simply all three of them, as major troubles areas in the world. They're causing huge amounts of problems for all of us, you and me and everybody else in the world. And there are also Islamic countries. There are countries whose religion is the official state religion is Islam. Now, if you look in the Quran, for example, or in the other religious books of Islam, you won't find anything that tells the Muslims that they should have big families. There's nothing there. And yet, most of the Muslim Islamic nations that have large numbers of Muslims have extremely high population growth rates.
Is that true in Indonesia also?
What?
Is that true in Indonesia also?
It's true in Indonesia too. And Indonesia is an interesting case because Indonesia has the largest population of Muslims, I think it's 1.8 million, forget 1.8 million or something like that, in the world, or more than that. More than that, I think. And so, even though the fertility rates in Indonesia are not as high as in some of those other countries, the total number of people being born in Indonesia is huge because of the large population to start with. And the question is, why does Afghanistan and Yemen and Somalia, for example, have such high growth rates? Well, it has to do with the kind of the culture that goes along with Islam in those countries, usually along with Islam. And how many of you have read Hirsi Ali, what's her first name?
Ayaan
Hirsi Ali's book. She's got two books. I should have brought them along.
One is Infidel.
Infidel, and the second one is
Nomad.
And Rose and I went to hear her. She was here in Madison this spring, and it was striking. And there's something about that Islamic culture. You know, the women are held hostage by the men, by and large, to do whatever the men want them to do. In large part, and at least in many parts of Islam, not all, that's the extremist. And the women are forced to stay at home pretty much and produce babies. And so that's a cultural thing that is not mandated by Islam, by the religion. So you have a lot of moderate Muslims around the world who don't believe in those practices, and many of those moderate communities, the population growth rate is not a big problem. Catholics is another problem, because of course the official, still, right, as of today, as far as I know, the official position of the Holy See, the Pope, and is that the only birth control that Catholics are allowed to use is the so-called rhythm method, which in fact doesn't work. Or the darn. And so you end up with people who follow the dictates of the Pope, Catholics, they have quite large families. Fortunately, probably the majority of Catholics around the world are not paying any attention anymore to the Pope. And their family sizes have gone down to reasonable numbers, what that we lead to zero population growth. But locally, in many parts of the world, such as in Latin America, parts of some of the African countries where the Catholic populations are very high, many of those people are following the dictates of the Vatican and are having larger families. There are also, there's lots of religious groups, Christian and other religions, various kinds of Christianity and other religions, that are dedicated to controlling population growth. They're worried, just like I am, about most of us, about population growth being a real problem, and are trying to do all they can to help the problem. A lot of the problem, of course, is availability of birth control methods, and especially in third world countries. And if countries, if the people have family planning clinics that are available, easily available to them, where they can get help anytime they want, they are having a lot less children in most of those countries, except countries like those extreme Islamist countries like Somalia. Somalia is terrible. Aden is another one, where the extremists, Islamists, kind of dominate. So why don't I throw this up to the group for questions, and we can talk about issues.
I guess the question I always have is, do you think under the present economic system that we have, any type of population control will be possible when you have a capitalist system that's predicated on consumption of more and more resources and the accumulation of wealth into fewer and fewer hands?
I frankly don't think that's going to, that's important to the equation.
You don't?
Well, it is. Poverty goes along with this. So if you have massive poverty, you're going to have higher population growth because the poorest people don't have access to birth control.
No, but my concern,
they're going to have more bigger families because they can't help.
But the concern that I have were about economics is that if you have money concentrated in too few hands, they're the people that will be able to purchase the resources. I mean, like, as long as there's people that have money to buy McMansions, they're going to buy them. The money has to be removed from their hands so that that can't happen.
Yeah.
We have something that we should all get busy about. I've been a member of Planned Parenthood for about 25 or so years, and I wonder how many of you are members of Planned Parenthood. Okay, not very many. well,
not very many our knowledge.
Hands went up.
Well, they did. Okay, I didn't look at it. But I mean, we do have to work against the elected governor, because he not only is openly against abortion, even for in cases of incest and rape, he also is against sex education in high schools. I mean, the man is really about to regress to the 19th century, and I would urge everyone to inundate those people with letters. There are a lot of letters going on in the newspaper now and so forth, but this man is really dangerous as far as population control is concerned.
That's right, and of course, the bigger picture is that under from Reagan on until Obama was elected, pretty much, the United States was not funding the UNEP, the United Stations Environmental, what do they call it, the Family Planning Program, which is extremely important worldwide in the third world countries, the poor countries. And one of the wonderful things that Obama has done is free that money up and get it sent out to being to help support those clinics.
But we need to
those
start
rapidly
right
growing
here,
countries.
Right here in our own
But you're
country.
Right. But it's the, you see, it's the, people like him who are the ones who are responsible for that ban on family planning worldwide, just, not just here.
I just wanted to bring up something that Ian Hersey Ollie pointed out in her current book, Nomad. She mentioned one man who had a number of wives and had 40 children. So it's a cultural thing in many of these Islamic countries to have many wives and to have many children. And in Africa, too, I think it's a sign of virility for their wives to have, you know, for their families to have a lot of children. but also the fundamentalist Christians and the fundamentalist Jews are also having large families. Mm-hmm. When you look at Israel and this growing Orthodox population, they're just really exacerbating the problems that are terrible.
Well, it's the concept of be fruitful and multiply.
That's right. Right. That's in the Bible.
Right. Combined in the fact that, you know, he's coming back soon and that make things right.
Well, the Jews don't. Oh, well, yeah.
Well, the Jews are still waiting.
So it's fundamentalists, just one comment. The fundamentalists.
Christians
are work in with the ultra right. Wing, I don't know, ultra-conservative Jews. Also, they collaborate, and
right.
Yeah, but the funny thing
they both have
about that is
serious problems.
That although they're in sync, the Jews have to convert to Christianity to be saved. So
yeah,
for about 7 years, I've been. Reading a lot about Haiti because of the adoption that most of you know about, our adopted grandson. And if there's any country that exemplifies this.
There's a good, really good chapter in Jared.
About Haiti.
You want to learn about why Haiti collapsed.
It exemplifies so many things. I mean, political corruption, poverty, the lack of, and I could go on and on. But what is interesting to me is what some of the non-governmental agencies are doing, and non-NGOs have been practically holding up the country. They get hit, criticized for it because, well, if they do it, then the government won't do it. Well, the government's not doing it anyway. So, and some of these are evangelical Christians who are clearly proselytizing. But what they're doing, they're not being judgmental about family size. They are taking in children, whether it's, and it pains them, I think, to see families giving up children because they can't afford it. Children are dying. They're dying of starvation. A lot of children are dying of starvation in Haiti. But a number of these organizations, they have orphanages, they have educational centers for women, and for men, and they are, some of them are, some of the very active ones are making free birth control available, which, you know, they are there, they're on the front lines, they see what's happening, they see the terrible agonies that people are going through, and so, you know, they have come to the conclusion that this has got to happen, and, it's a drop in the bucket. I mean,
that's a good sign.
It's a good sign, and it needs to happen all over that country and all over many other countries. In addition to, as one of your books had a whole list of gaps, the gap between the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah.
In addition to bridging those gaps. Now, saying it doesn't going to solve the world's problems, but it's certainly, some things are happening in the right direction.
Well, Haiti is a good example of a collapsed state, where once a country has collapsed, it doesn't escape the collapse. It simply gets caught in that collapsed state indefinitely, and that's what we want to try to avoid. Even Jared Diamond points out, I think it's, he points out, in a sense, the whole world is drifting toward that kind of collapse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very serious matter, yeah. Easter Island is another one. There's several other examples like
that. Yeah. In terms of communicating with other religious groups that
aren't as informed as we are, possibly humor could be a channel of communication and a deadly serious problem. I've got a suggestion.
Humor.
Humor.
I didn't catch that.
Young folks.
Okay.
Old folks. Everybody come. And I'll tell you a little story that will be a lot of fun. About a voice that said from on high, go forth and multiply. But not too much. You have been given the intelligence to realize that your little planet does not have an infinite surface, and that an environmental collapse could destroy your beautiful little planet, as well as you and most of your descendants.
Right. That's too obvious. But I mean, what concerns me is that even today, feminists are claiming that to talk about population control is sexist because it's telling the woman how she can use her body or not. And I find that trend disturbing.
It's really stupid.
Oh, yeah.
And the same argument was widespread among black communities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And people don't dare say that, but you have to say it out loud.
This is especially a problem, of course, in colonial communities or in various places in the world. So they, in Africa, for example, they,
I'm talking the Africans, about American blacks. Right.
Yeah, I understand, but it's an even bigger problem in terms of the total numbers of people.
Well, of course it's
because they're, and the white people in Africa, for example, who are from the colonists, who are pushing birth control for everybody, including the black population, they're accused of genocide. Mm-hmm. Genocide. They want to get accused of trying to get rid of the black population.
But she has a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
A comment. I've been to both China and Japan. I'm not very traveled, but I've been there. And I believe it was China that everybody was so amazed that they had a rule and you could have one child.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I was there, I found out if you happen to have two, you pay a tax, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So there's no really strong government insistence on making that work.
Chris, we do that.
So I think they're not that serious about it.
You could have a deduction if you have more.
I think they do know it's a problem. At one point, I heard a comment by a Chinese governmental official that how would the world likes to provide for an expanded population in China? I mean, he's very well aware of the problem.
So financially, they don't care. If they can get some money out of it, they're willing to let it be problem.
Well, they could give tax breaks to people that choose not to have children in this country. That would be a smart thing to do.
Yes. Yeah. Amen.
The United States ought to have a policy.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard that the Iranian government is interested in curbing the population growth there.
They are.
And that's a Muslim country.
For a while, the Supreme Ayatollah that kind of ran things there was opposed to population control, but then he changed his mind. Decided Iran had a very high population growth rate, and but the official policy has been enforced now for I don't know how many years of controlling population, and it's working pretty well.
How much of that is because it's a male-dominated country?
How much of what is?
The overpopulation.
I don't know.
If you're crazy because you have a lot of descendants.
Yeah, it's an Islamic country, and everybody knows it's the domination of women by the men is a serious problem. But I don't think the population growth and the birth rates in Iran are a particular problem in spite of that.
Why is it that
not, it's not
Europe,
a huge problem anyway.
Why is it that in Europe this does not seem to be a problem? The Germans are worried now that they're going backwards in population. And the French and even the Italians.
Yeah.
They're a Catholic country.
I bet it's hard because it's such a filled-up country. There's
yes.
No, that's the other side of the coin.
It's a cultural thing, too. They are into the rationale and the rational thinking that goes back to the old.
Yeah.
People can hardly afford property there, isn't that true?
No,
and people are also, the Germans are very selfish. They're very comfortable. They don't want to have the discomfort of too many kids because then they'd have to give up a lot of their comforts.
Yeah.
They're very openly that way.
There are a lot of demographers who are worried about that. And of course, in some of those countries, the local ethnic, local people are having, don't have enough children to maintain the population. But what's happening is that immigrants are coming in, and they're the ones that are causing a population growth in
the
countries.
They're also causing social unrest.
Yes.
There's something else that we haven't mentioned. In many countries where they have a lot of children, it's because, at least in the past, survival rates among them, in the families were low, and the parents are anxious to have children to look after them when they're old, and there's no social network for
no social security,
no social security
except the family,
and that's a big factor, I think, in why people have large families.
That's why large families were, I mean, so predominant in the 19th century in this country. The same.
Yes.
I think that's a major factor in.
Well, they needed the labor too.
Well, that too. Yeah.
In Latin America, for example.
They didn't even have social security in this country until 1933.
Yeah,
33. Just when Hitler came into power, the Americans got social security.
Yeah. I think that's a major factor in Latin America, where a lot of our immigrants are coming from, Mexico and Central America.
And we could have had single-payer health insurance at that time, so thanks to the AMA, we didn't.
They don't have Social Security, so they have big families in order to have somebody to take care of them when they're old.
Right. Or it doesn't cover the whole population. Yeah. They have it.
I want to ask, this kind of went back to your earlier part of what you were talking about. That claim that the cliff dwellers and the people of that region died out because their soil was depleted? Is that correct? Is that a theory?
Oh, you're thinking about Southwest?
Yeah.
Because Indians in the Northeast knew to put fish.
I'm not sure what the current wisdom is.
I can't
and those people.
Native people not knowing how to put fertilizer back.
What I heard was years ago was due to a period of a drought, a long, long drought about.
There's a little ice age in the 1400s.
Yeah.
About Easter Island, I think accepted.
Yeah, Easter Island, you read Collapse, he talks about that. And Easter Island actually was a religious issue because they had a weird local religion that told them to cut down all the trees they had.
Oh, God.
And so they got rid of all the trees, 100% of the trees.
What was the motivation for
it? It was some sort of weird religious belief.
It was really
and they, so that's an interesting example of religion, but it's not a big factor in the world picture now. But it's a message, I think, that we have to think. And then instead they built all those, put all those big rocks up, and so on. Put all their effort in doing those kinds of things rather than paying attention to sustainably using their natural resources.
They think that may have been the reason for the fall of Angkor Wat as well. It just overpopulated and overcultivated the area.
Any other questions for Galen? If not, thank you very much, Galen.